Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Van Lanningham, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank Jerry for a very underwhelming introduction. And people ask how you stay humble when you're doing this. People like Jerry, who just, they don't care. His name is Jeff. He drank. I'm delighted to be here with you and to be a part of this conference. I want to, right away before I do anything, I want to right out of the gate, anyone who's new, I want to welcome you. But especially those of you who are in the crowd and you're asking the question that we all have sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and asked, and that is, am I an alcoholic? How do I know, right? I'm going to right now give you the secret. I'm going to help you. We're going to fast track you. It is a balmy 60 degrees in here right now. If you feel hot, like you're going to suffocate, you are probably suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience can solve. So I want to welcome you. It's a little hot. I have a contingency plan, so don't anyone worry. If I pass out, they're going to start playing my CD till I can be revived, and then I'll just pick right up wherever I was on that. Seems to be customary to go through the formal introduction, so let me do that. As I said, my name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. I have a home group. My home group is the Northern Plains Group. It meets in Tuesday nights at 7:30 in Fargo, North Dakota. It's a speaker meeting. We'd certainly love to see any and all of you there. If you're all coming on the same night, give me a heads up. But I have a sponsor. My sponsor, and this is true, years ago, my sponsor asked me, he said, don't mention me by name. And I thought, that's really cool. My sponsor's that humble. And then as the years have gone by, I'm like, is he just embarrassed of me and the actions that I take? I don't know. I don't have the courage to ask, but I'll choose to believe he's humble. But he's my sponsor, and I'm current with him. And that's important. It's important. He knows exactly where I'm at and what's going on in my life. And the person that I have as my sponsor is, he's my sponsor for two reasons. And I want to touch on this because sometimes, and I'm not here to take exception with anything, but sometimes people talk about find a sponsor who has what you want. I don't know what I want, and I certainly don't know what I need, as has been well established in step three. So why is he my sponsor? For two reasons. Number one, his voice is louder than my head. When it chips are down, when my instincts are kicking in and telling me I have got to do this, whatever this might be, I will call my sponsor and I will let his voice override my best thinking. Okay? That's number one. The other reason that he's my sponsor is that he turns me and pushes me towards Alcoholics Anonymous always. I have never gotten a pass from him. I've never gotten, Jeff, you've done so much. And I can tell what you need to do is stay home and relax and rest. Let me tell you how bad it is. I'm from Fargo, North Dakota, as I said. And a month or two ago, as I said, my home group's on a Tuesday night. Tuesday night in Fargo, North Dakota in February, it was 38 degrees below zero. Not wind chill, air temp. The mayor came on and declared a national emergency because of cold. Who the hell does that? And I called my sponsor in a fit of insanity, right? And I was like, hey, Bob, listen, it's 38 below. Do you think this one time I could stay home and, you know, miss my home group? The mayor doesn't want me out there. Sure, the governor wouldn't if he knew what was going on. And there's this long pause. And then my sponsor says, you know, Jeff, he said, the new man that's walking through the snowbanks to get to that meeting, he'll be so appreciative that you were there that maybe it's a good idea if you go. And I went, and there was no new man at all. Me and a couple of my other idiot friends are like, hey, yeah. But you know what? I was there. And at the end of the day, that's really what this is about. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. Because I think it's important that my sponsor keep me focused towards Alcoholics Anonymous. Because Danny touched on something last night, and I think it's so important, and I normally might not do this, but Danny shared a little bit about his story and what's been going on with him in this year, and I'm really good friends with Danny. And Danny and I talk outside of these things, and I've watched him go through this. And the book talks about the certain trials and low spots that will come. Certain, right? This idea that we're going to go through life skipping around and not have any trouble is just a misnomer. It's not true. Things will happen. And I watched Danny go through all the things that he talked about last night, but he was facing into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so hence, he got more active when it got bad. If you're facing out, I believe when trouble comes, it will drive you out the door. So it's important that I am always facing into Alcoholics Anonymous and that, yeah, by all means. What a cheap solicitation of applause. Yeah, interrupt me. By all means. If it's not loud enough, I'll comment for the people on the CD. They're clapping right now. You can't hear it. But anyway, I want to thank the committee for having me here. Like Joe, I was asked a couple of years ago by Harlan. And I didn't know him other than through phone and email correspondence. But I know people like him. They're impact players in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they do things that the rest of us are allowed to benefit from. And I'm certainly grateful for members like him who have come before me and who set things up like this for us to enjoy. And, you know, as much as I would love, and believe me, there's nothing I would love better than to take some pot shots at Jason for any host of number of reasons. All kidding aside, I want to compliment, you know, it's some big shoes to step into. And you're a good man, and you're a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you. Okay, that's enough applause for Jason. He's also addicted to announcements and a little controlling. So, and I want to thank, this would be the point in the talk where I would thank my host, Tim. But I found out something strange, that Tim is not my host. So instead, I have to let you know that Tim kidnapped my wife and I at the airport. And thankfully, he brought us here. I don't know. I'm assuming my host is tied up somewhere in a cabin in the woods. But Tim has taken very good care of us, and I'm immensely grateful. I was, when Tim called me a couple weeks ago and I found out he would be the one that would be picking us up, my mood immediately went up 60 points because I love Tim. And my wife is along, and she's never been to Oregon, and there's no one better to represent your state and to show us around with far more information than we would ever need or want. Wow. Tim knows a lot about Oregon. And the last thing I want to say is I want to thank you for allowing me to bring my wife. And I do this kind of stuff, and Heidi and I, you know, we have three kids, and I may or may not get into some of that, but we're not in a position where we can just take off and go to Oregon. And we're certainly not, we don't have the time nor the finances to just travel. We both work, and we both, you know, try and do our recovery. My wife's in Al-Anon. And so it's a big deal that we get to come here, and we get a chance to hang out together, and I thank you for me, and she's reminded me four times in her Al-Anon way that I need to thank you. By the way, I'm going to tell you this. I wasn't going to do this, but I feel like the new people need to hear this. Whenever Heidi's with me, everyone's always oohing and aahing over her, okay? You know, I want to meet your wife and what she puts up with. It's like, wait, hey, hey. And so let me tell you a different type of story about my wife. This is my favorite story, and I will get in trouble for this. I'm willing to pay the price, new people, for you. I care. Years ago, we're sitting at home, and I get a call. We're sitting at the kitchen table, and I get a call from this convention, this Las Vegas convention. And Heidi can hear them. They're one of those loud talkers. She can hear them. And they're saying, hey, we've got a convention. It meets every year on the weekend of Thanksgiving, right, the Friday after Thanksgiving. It meets that weekend. Heidi can hear this, and she's doing this. No, no. She's whispering to me, that's family time. No, And I'm like, yeah, I get it. I'm going to say no. And they're going through their little spiel, and they get to the end, and they're like, and by the way, we will pay for you and a guest to come. And Heidi's like, yes. Tell them yes. Yeah. So don't be buddying up to her too much. By the way, this has nothing to do with anything, and it will give you some insight as to how my mind works, but these cardboard cutouts, you draw your attention over here, right? Here's what's going on. Bill has come home drunk and found the worst hiding spot ever. Well, no one will see me now. And Lois and Ann are doing the Al-Anon crosshair. You said you'd be home at 10. Yeah, now everyone's going to be looking over there. I want to share one more story, and then I promise I'll eventually talk about alcoholism, but I didn't hear tonight, and this is not a lecture. This is just me sharing my experience with you. But during some of the meetings, I have heard some people that have taken it upon themselves to do some chanting during How It Works. Hear me out. A couple times I've heard people, you know, what's the point? The point is, blah, 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 blah. I just want to share my experience. I was a year sober, and we were going down to the Cornhusker Roundup. The Cornhusker Roundup meets in Omaha, Nebraska. And back then, it was a really big, thriving. I was like a year sober, so this was 26 years ago. And it was like 3,000 people. And we were all going down on Friday, big group of us. By this time, I had a sponsor, and he had a bunch of people he sponsored. We had it all set up to go down Friday morning. Well, I got a wild hair with this other guy, and we decided to go down Thursday for the early bird meeting, right? Just the two of us. Which, by the way, nothing good ever comes about when you're like, hey, I know what the group is doing, and I'm about to peel off and do my own thing. I've never looked back and thought, what a great idea that was. But nonetheless, me and this guy take off to Omaha on our own, and we go down for this early bird meeting. And at the early bird meeting, when they read How It Works, they got to the point where they said, at some of these, we balked. And the crowd starts balking like chickens, right? I'm a year sober. I'm 22 years old. It is by far the coolest thing I have ever seen. I'm going to bring this back to North Dakota with me. It'll be a big thing. So Friday rolls around, and the rest of our crew come down. Me and this guy, yeah, you can about see where this is going, right? Me and this guy, we don't say anything because I want to impress my sponsor. And I'm going to show him how in I am with the hip trends of Omaha. So we get to the Friday night meeting, much like this. There's 3,000 people. They're reading How It Works. Some of these steps we balked. And me and my buddy jump up. Bawk, 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 right? No one else did it. We're the only two. And I got to tell you, the look on my sponsor's face, I'm like, so that's what pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization is. Should I just go home now? I mean, clearly I'm getting a new sponsor. I get that. But so all I'm saying is be careful when you're yelling out during How It Works, because you may damage your recovery. When I say that I'm an alcoholic, what I mean is that alcohol is not my problem. I'm going to explain that. I know it sounds a little weird. You may wonder, by the way, if alcohol isn't the problem, then why do we celebrate sobriety? Why do we have this big sobriety countdown where we talk about this? And luckily for all of us, Bill Wilson was once asked that question. If alcohol isn't the problem, why then do we celebrate sobriety? Just as alcohol is a symptom of what's wrong with me, so too is sobriety a symptom of what can be right with me. My recovery will equate into my sobriety. That is why we celebrate it. But we are celebrating so much more than just I have abstained from alcohol. We are celebrating the fact that I have found a way out of this life, of this prison that I live in. See, there's been something wrong with me long before I ever drank. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what caused it. I didn't even know how to explain it. I just knew that I have always seemed to feel a little uncomfortable in my own skin. I have always felt like I am a second-class citizen, and I don't know where it comes from, right? There's something wrong with me. I'm the type of kid that I walk around, and I have all these emotions, and I have a racy mind. I analyze everything, right? And I'm constantly, I don't listen to people. I'm interpreting what they mean, and I interpret things like tones of voice and body language. I'm the guy you walk on eggshells around because you can't say anything to me without me taking it personal and as a put down, right? I'm the guy you can, the most innocent of things. By the way, this can happen in sobriety. This isn't some symptom of me as a child. Someone can say something to me like, hey, Jeff, it's good to see you. I haven't seen you around here in a while. What the hell does that mean, right? You think you're more active than me? And I was just trying to say hello. I am the type of person who compares the way I feel to the way you look, and I come up short. Nobody looks as anxious as you feel. Nobody looks like they're driven by fear like I know that I am, right? So everybody looks like they've got it together. I'm the type of person that requires people to treat me special so that I feel average, and I need it all the time, and nobody and nothing can treat you special all the time. And when it stops, because I'm now accepted, I feel like it's rejection. And I react poorly and immaturely to things like that. And I think I need to move on, right? I have this head of bad wiring. I take everything going on around me personal. Everything, right? So what that means is that I can walk into a convenience store or a hotel, and the poor girl behind the desk who's just doing her job will smile at me and say, welcome to such and such. And I think something's going on. I think there's electricity in the air. I'm like, welcome yourself. Hey. And it's on, right? And then I see she has a wedding ring and I crash back to earth. Who could ever love me? And as I've mentioned, I have a perception problem, right? I don't see and hear the world. Any little variance can set me off. I was flying somewhere one time, and this lady is taking the tickets. She's clearly having a pretty good day. And she's like, hey, have a great flight, right? And taking everyone's ticket, have a great flight. I'm starting to watch this. I'm watching what she says to each person. It's every time she says, have a great flight. I get up and I hand her my ticket, fully expecting to have a great flight. And she says, all righty then, and hands me my ticket. No. I don't know what I did. I don't know what's going on. But I need to know why I got all righty then. Whatever I did, I will apologize for. I just want people to like me. And it's another thing. I demand that everyone in the room like me. See, I'm a guy that if there was an organ in the body that houses self-esteem, mine's got a leak. No matter what I do, no matter what accomplishment, no matter what accolade or achievement, it goes in and it seems to fill it up for a little while, but it's leaking. And pretty soon I'm back to needing approval. And if you can't generate your own self-esteem, you require the people around you to tell you you're okay. All of them. Well, geez, Jeff, 99 out of 100 really love you. Who is the one? That's the one I'm going after. I have these little idiosyncrasies that I don't know how to explain. I didn't know anyone else ever had them. I'm the type of person that gets offended when I'm not invited to something I don't want to be at in the first place. You can't say that out loud, right? You sound nuts. Hey, you going to Tom's Move on Friday night? No, I wasn't invited. You know, I'm Eeyore from Winnie and the Pooh walking around. And, well, would you like to come? No, God, no. Tom collects pianos. I don't want to be there, but I want to be invited so I feel like I'm a part of and then can lie to you on why I can't be there. There's something wrong. Something wrong with me. It's not my upbringing. Nobody taught me to feel this way. Nothing, right? And I'm always looking for my spot. I'm always thinking if I can just find the spot where I belong. I was restless from the day I came out of the womb, right? Just, I'm looking for my spot, and I can't find it. I join things. I join basketball. I join band. I join theater. And for a little while, I think this is it. Because I like things when they have the shine to them. But the shine quickly wears off of things, and suddenly I'm like, nah, this ain't it either. Got to keep moving. Got to keep going. I don't know what any of this is. I'm an optimist at heart. I'm always convinced it's going to be different next year. Man, in the fifth grade, I really screwed around. But in the sixth grade, you got to buckle down. It is time, right? And it never comes. I'm always planning my life on how it's going to get better, and nothing ever seems to happen. And so eventually, what happened for me was that I had an opportunity to drink alcohol. See, alcohol isn't the problem. Alcohol is the solution. And it's sometimes hard to see that because alcohol will quickly become a problem. And the people around me think, well, he has a drinking problem. And I understand why they think that. But that is not my issue. I promise you, that is not my issue. See, an alcohol does something for me. This is important. Alcohol does something for me. So later on in life, when alcohol starts to do something to me, I'm willing to pay that price. If you're here tonight with an alcoholic and you yourself are not, you may wonder sometimes, why does he or she do this? Why do they put themselves through this? And I promise you, they are chasing a delusion that they, because alcohol once upon a time did something for them, they're willing to pay the price of what it's doing to them in the hopes that somehow, someday, they will control and enjoy their drinking. The great obsession of every alcoholic. That's it. That's my problem. Alcohol goes into my system and it fills all the holes. It rounds the corners off. It turns me into the person I have always wanted to be, right? Have you ever thought that to yourself? Like, this is the real me. Why can't I be this way when I'm sober? I'm such an idiot, sober and self-conscious and tripping over myself and I can't talk to women and da-da-da. Alcohol fixes all that and more. Right? I go out, and it's just a quick example. I go out, and in North Dakota, you drink a lot in fields, right? There's nowhere to go, and you're underage. So we'll be at a bonfire, and I had a mind that's racing a lot, and I'm making all these comparisons, and looking around, and suddenly I realize I become very self-conscious. I'm the only guy here in a long-sleeve shirt. What does it matter with me, right? It's the middle of summer. It's July. It's hot, I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt. I don't even know how to dress, right? This is what I'm thinking in my mind. And people come in and everybody looks like they're comfortable with each other. And then some guy would walk in who I was always intimidated and inadequate of. He's wearing a tank top and his hat's on backwards and he's high-fiving everyone because he went to cool guy school where you learn how to do that kind of stuff. I hate that guy. And then she walks into the room. Yeah. Who's she? She's the girl of my dreams. She's the girl I'm pursuing. Now, when I say I'm pursuing, I don't mean I'm taking any action, but I think about her a lot. And I think if I could just get her, if I could just find her, it would all settle down and become okay. But a girl like that would never go out with a guy like me. I don't have anything to offer. And if I were to ask her, she would start laughing, the party would start laughing, everyone would start laughing, and I would be exposed for the fraud and sham that I know I am. And I'm not going to risk it. Fear keeps me locked in a box. I can't even come out and see you in the world because I have so much fear flowing through me. I start drinking, and by the third or fourth drink, something starts to change. Nothing's changed. The same people are there. We're in the same field. I'm wearing the same long sleeve shirt. Everything's the same, but it all suddenly looks different to me. This is what alcohol does for me. I stand up a little straighter, right? And I look at myself in this long sleeve shirt. I think this was a silly idea. And I go all Hulk Hogan, right? And I rip that thing off, toss it into the fire. To this day, one of the coolest things I've ever done. Now we're going to even the score. So let's go find hat on backwards, tank top, cool guy. And I go find him, and I'm like, hey, About an hour ago when you walked in, there was tension between us. He doesn't know there was tension. He just showed up to the party and was saying hello to his friends. But I'm now babbling on drunk, letting him know, hey, if you're looking for trouble, you found it, baby. And man, that's a great feeling when you walk around afraid of your own shadow most days. Suddenly to be able to let this guy know what a punk he is. And after I've dressed him up and down, I'm ready to go find her. Rectify this wrong right now. And I see her, and I go sauntering over. And I let her know, listen, I'm picking you, babe. You. We both know I could have anyone I want at this party. Male or female, don't matter, but I'm picking you. And she doesn't see it my way. I'm not offended. I'm not worried. I'm not anything. I lock her in the bathroom until she comes to her senses. You will stay in there until you know which way's up. And I don't think anything of it. I don't think anything of it. Now, we all know it doesn't stay like that. Is this podium moving? Heat stroke is kicking in. If it stayed like that, you'd have a different speaker tonight. But something happens. Something happens, and I start drinking more than I plan to. I start overshooting the mark of just getting there, right? There, gotta get there. And I don't know when it happened or why, but like I said, somewhere along the lines, I crossed an invisible line. And for me, I was continually trying to find a way to control and enjoy my drinking. And ultimately, what happened for me was one night, I was at a party, drunk, of course, nothing new. By this time, I'm the guy, I've gotten drunk, I've passed out. I'm now waking back up as everyone else is showing up to start drinking, right? I'm on Tuesday drunk, and I'm, and off we go. And I hurt a lot on the inside. I was always full of all this angst and hurt and all these emotions and sensitive. And did I mention I'm sensitive, by the way? That's another thing. My God, and I've always hated that about myself. I hate being sensitive. It's a wussy emotion. And I've tried to wish it away and will it away, and it doesn't go anywhere, let me assure you. One time I saw this guy and we were talking. He goes, Jeff, I live my life by not caring what anyone thinks. Whoa, that was just genius. I'm like, there it is. That's my plan. I'm going to live my life and don't care what anyone thinks. But God didn't make me that way. I try walking around. I don't care what anybody thinks. Good, because Pete doesn't like you. Why? What did I do? Hard to be macho. So I'm at this party and I'm full of all this angst and pain and hurt. And I decided that I wanted everyone to hurt, right? And I started hurling insults at people, just trying to make people hurt as bad as I do. Because at the end of the day, my philosophy is that if I cannot bring myself up, I will try and bring you down to my level. I'm a candle blower outer too. I'm a guy, if I can't generate my own self-worth, then I start trying to blow other people's candles out, right? Just a laundry list of defects I brought in here with me. And so I was trying to attack this party and hurt these people, and quite frankly, I succeeded. You know, eventually it was literally me on one side of the room and everyone else on the other. And this lady stepped forward and she's like, what is your problem? And I stopped. This question stumped me. And inside, a voice was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to say the things I'm saying. I don't want to hurt people. I don't want this girl in the corner to be crying over what I said. That breaks my heart. I don't know what's wrong with me. I am in the grips of something that is killing me, and I don't know how to even begin to look for help. Okay? Now, if you were to ask me that question back then, only I knew what I know now back then, there was probably a better way to say what I just said, but you get my point. When that girl asked me what was the matter with me, I'd have this answer. My problem is alcoholism. I suffer from it. You may think it's a drinking problem, but let me explain to you what it really is. Alcoholism affects me in three facets: physical, mental, and spiritual. Let's break it down. Let's talk about the physical side of alcoholism. Our big book describes it as a phenomenon of craving, right? I didn't know what that meant. I had to have a sponsor. My sponsor was like, you know what that means? Sure, I know. Phenomenon, right? You know, he's like, yeah, I know what it means to you. Well, you know, like Bigfoot and stuff. And he's like, no. Look it up. I always got that. I had to look it up. Phenomenon is indescribable, right? I have this phenomenon of craving. What happens is I have an allergy to alcohol. When I start drinking alcohol, my body processes and breaks it down differently than the normal person. Something happens inside of me, and a drink that goes into my body calls out for another. No matter how great the necessity or the wish, no matter the promises I have made, something takes hold of me, and I start drinking to satisfy a craving that is beyond my control. There's an old proverb that talks about a man takes a drink, and then the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. We've lived that. That is our life encapsulated in one little proverb. I know exactly what that means. I know exactly what that feels like. So I have this allergy. So let's talk about that, okay? Let's talk about a different type of allergy. Let's say, for example, you are allergic to bananas. And every time you eat a banana, you break out and break big red welts, right? That's pretty serious. How far down that rabbit hole are you going with bananas? Oh, you know, when I eat Chiquita bananas, I break out, but I'm sure Dole bananas will be different. Let me give that a try. No, you don't do that. You don't keep a banana in your glove box so at lunch you can run out, scarf one down quick. I don't have bananas in my house in case people want to show. I don't want to be rude. If they want a banana, I want to offer bananas. I don't lie to people. Hey, I'm going out for a jog so I can run down to the market and eat bananas. I don't hide bananas all over my house so in the middle of the night, if I have to have one, I've got them scattered. I don't do any of those things. You know what I do? I quit eating bananas. Done. Move on with my life. No sponsor, no steps, no Bananas Anonymous, nothing. I'm just gone. You offer me one, I'm like, I don't eat bananas. I'm allergic to them. Wow. You're a walking miracle, Jeff. You're damn right. And one day at a time, baby. Why? Now, far worse things happen to me when I drink alcohol than just breaking out in some red splotches. Why can I not stay away from alcohol then? What is this hold it has on me? Let's talk about the second part of the illness. Mental obsession of the mind to drink alcohol. First time I heard that, I'm like, that doesn't apply to me. I don't sit around thinking about drinking all the time. And my sponsor's like, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about this concept that over certain periods of time, my mind blocks out all of the reasons why I am not supposed to drink for the insane idea it will be different this time. And it only has to make sense for a little while. This isn't going under heavy cross-examination, okay? It just has to make sense for a little while. I was on this kick. I told everyone I was quitting drinking. I always did that because I thought it increased my chances of long-term sobriety. I was wrong. And I told everyone I was quitting drinking. We went on this road trip. And just talking about sensitive and perception problem, I'm going to share one with you as it just happened. I just happened to scan over to this side of the room. I'm like, none of these people are looking at me. What the hell's the matter? I'm like, oh, you're looking at the screen. Okay. Carry on. Start screaming at this side. I'm over here. Quit looking at Bill Wilson. He's hiding. By the way, have you saw the look Bill has on? He's shooting daggers at you. First time I walked in, I saw him. I'm like, whoa, I felt like Mr. Brown. I'm like, look, I'm so sorry about telling your wife about your mistress. Yeah. In my defense, Bill, you may have put yourself in a position to be hurt, but I digress. If you don't get that joke, get a sponsor. I forgot where I was. Road trip? Oh, road trip. I was about ready to have Jerry introduce me again. I have that feeling wash over me again of love. You know what? I'm giving Jerry a hard time. Let me tell you what. Since I give him a hard time, I want to give. I sat down. I'm like, Jerry, you look nice. And Jerry said, you know, I was told a long time ago that I dress up to respect my peers and to respect the program that saves my life. So. I only make fun of people I like. And more importantly, though, I respect members like Jerry. I really do. And I'm glad that we do this thing together and that we do suit up and show up when it's 180 degrees in Seaside, Oregon. What a blessing. Road trip. How my non-blue band people doing over there? By the way, I was hanging. Yeah, there we go. That's my people. Either through I don't care or I'm unmanageable. That's where I'm sitting if I'm not up here tonight. And because I'm a rebel, I don't even have a blue band on. So I'm breaking the rules. Road trip. I didn't forget. I'm in the back seat of this car. We're on a road trip, and there's a cooler, and there's beer in this cooler. And we get out of town, and I reach in, and I grab a beer. And my friend says, hey, I thought you quit drinking. I'm like, yeah, when I'm in town, not on road trips. And made perfect sense to me. Made sense to my friends, too. They're, oh, yeah, you're right, Jeff, of course. My mind, over some period of time, tells me it's going to be different this time. And a sober mind brings me back to a drink and tells me it's okay. Fill in the blank on why it's going to be okay, but it's okay. And a body that reacts differently or abnormally to alcohol takes over, and a phenomenon of craving develops that allows me or causes me to drink more than I planned, right? This is deadly, a deadly illness, and I have not even gotten to the third part. The third part of my illness is the spiritual side, this spiritual malady. Ultimately, it lies underneath all the rest, I believe. And the spiritual malady is just this. I am disconnected from something that I cannot be disconnected from. It's that simple. I am disconnected from a power source that I have got to find a way to plug back into. Otherwise, I'm never going to work properly. When you look at these lights that we're on, ultimately these things are wired and they go somewhere, but they go to power. If we unplug them, they're not going to work. No amount of praying, chanting, analyzing, therapy, journaling, whatever is going to make them come on. We've got to find a way to take action to get them plugged into the power source so they can work. Same with me. Same thing with me, because left without a solution, and I basically have two solutions to alcoholism. One is drinking, one is God. What is my choice going to be? One will kill me, one takes a lot longer. And that's the decision. I've got to find a way, because without a solution in my life, I always start to develop signs and symptoms most people would classify as mental illness. True story. I will always resort to my natural state of being sober without a solution, increased feelings of restlessness, irritability, and discontentment. I'm restless. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on, but this is not where I'm supposed to be. I'm not with the right person. I'm not doing the right thing. I don't have the right job. I've got to make a change. I'm discontent. Nothing keeps its shine very long with me. Nothing ever holds on that special spot. I become discontent with jobs, with cars, with outfits, with anything you can name. And hit a chord there. And and I'm irritable. I'm irritable in the sense that I'm tired of doing twice as much as everyone else and getting half the results. My sponsor, when I got into AA, told me that I suffered from a lot of self-pity. And I'm like, no, I do not feel sorry for myself all the time. He's like, but that's not really what self-pity is. Self-pity is a deep-seated belief that your life is harder than others. Oh, yeah, I got that in spades. Yeah, I got that. I get it. And unless I can experience a psychic change, a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient enough to bring about recovery from alcoholism, cast old ideas and attitudes and outlooks aside for a completely new set, call it whatever you're comfortable with, unless I can find a way to tap into this power and have this change, I am doomed to repeat this cycle. I will always go back to the drink, and the drink will take me. End of story. I will become so uncomfortable in sobriety without some kind of solution that eventually my mind says, I know how to make it go away, because I am a guy. I am wired, and by the way, I want you to hear this because this is true of me in AA too, unfortunately. I'm a guy who's wired to look for relief rather than recovery. I'm more concerned with how I feel than what I should be doing. And that can get you into some really bad jackpots in AA, let me assure you. So I didn't know any of that stuff back then. I just knew that there was something wrong. I ended up bombing out of college and going to rehab. And I'm skipping. I've had a couple failed suicide attempts. Danny and I've also been arrested in Mexico. We were talking about that earlier. It was really nice to bond over that. And had a lot of things happen. Had a lot of signs that have come along to tell me to knock it off, and I've ignored them all. Eventually, when I was 21 years old, I was beaten down to a point where I just had nowhere else to go. And I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit open-minded. I'd been to AA before, and I judged my way out, and nobody understood me, and nobody knows what it's like to be me, because it's a funny thing, but the one thing we all have in common is we all hold this deep-seated belief that our case is different. And I'm kind of like you, but I'm a little different. And people ahead of me in sobriety tell me it never really truly ever goes away. We're all going to die with that. I was a little different, and we have that in common. But anyway, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 21, and I didn't know, you know. And to the people, to the three young ladies who got the books, I want to welcome you, and I want to congratulate you. I don't know how it worked for you, but I sometimes wonder when they have you talk, I'm always envisioning, you know, you probably didn't call your friends and be like, hey, I'm on my first day sober. Is there a big AA convention in town we could go to or something? So you were probably coerced into coming, I'm guessing, right? Now just come. It's fine. We'll sit in the back. Speaker. It'll be no big deal. Oh, well, there's this one part where we're going to have you get up in front of 2,500 people. Other than that, just enjoy the free book. And but God bless you. I think if you are here, when I talk in AA, when I'm given the privilege to do this, I try when I'm sitting here, you might sometimes wonder what's going through people's head. I'll tell you what's going through mine. I'm focusing in on two people in the crowd, and I don't know who the two are. So I start looking around, but I am focusing in on the person who's here for their first meeting and the person who's here for their last. Those are the two people I want to talk to. And that is what I ask God to do. I don't know who you are, though. But I want to share a message with you that allows you to hopefully find two things I think are essential to recovery: identification and hope. Without identification, AA is just a nice place. What do you think of AA? I think it's great for them. I wish I had that problem. I wish I drank too much like them. I'm mentally ill, an alien, and something's wrong with me. But them, yeah, absolutely, it's great. So I have to find a way to identify. And when I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and you shared with me, I started to lower that barrier, that feeling of difference. Because you started to share things that I, too, had done. I remember hearing somebody in AA talk about how they used to lie about how much they drank to brag to their friends. And then they'd gotten so bad in how much they drank, they went to the other extreme and they started to lie to minimize it because they were embarrassed. I've done that. I know what that feels like. But then they started to share things that I didn't know other people knew, that I didn't know anyone else in the world suffers from. And then the day comes where I can finally, hopefully realize that I am an alcoholic, that I have what you have. I have to get that first. But once I get that, and that's a rock bottom moment. It's a rock bottom. It's not a pleasurable experience to finally concede to your innermost self that you're a real alcoholic. It's painful. But once I do, I start to climb back out because now I get the second part, which is hope. Wait a sec. You're just like me. I have what you have, but you've found a way to live better and comfortably. And you have some happiness and some usefulness, all of the things that I couldn't possibly ever get for myself. And so maybe, just maybe, if I do what you do, I could get what you have. That's the hope. You're not going to know it's going to work. What we need to get you to the point is, okay, I'll try. Which, by the way, I think is a simplification of step two. Okay, I'll try. I don't think it's going to work, and I'm convinced everyone will be talking about how different I was at my funeral, but I'll give it a try. Step two in its ugly form. So I got those two things somewhere along the lines. I started to identify, and I started to get some hope. And the people around me that were doing things that I wanted to do or that seemed to be living the type of life that I would like to live had certain similarities, right? And one of the big ones was everybody had a sponsor. And so I'm looking around, and I am, as an alcoholic, one of the frustrating, peculiar traits that I have is that I am an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I didn't know it was a thing until I heard it. But what it means is this. I walk around and I think, man, I am worthless. I hate myself. I don't keep any commitments. I've never really done anything that I take any real pride in. We should get a sponsor. Who am I going to bestow the greatest honor of their life with by sponsoring me? And it's hard to explain that, you know, if you don't have it. So I started looking around for a sponsor. And there was this guy in town. He was about my age. He'd been sober for 3 years, I would find out later. And he had just moved back to Minot, North Dakota. And he had been instructed by his sponsor, hey, look, you got to start working with people. You got to give this thing away. You need to find some sick alcoholics. So he was on the hunt. He was looking for sick alcoholics. And, you know, I come barreling up, qualifying on all fronts. And I walked up and I asked him to sponsor me. And he said, yeah, I'd be happy to. He said, now I'm gonna ask you to do some things. Said it real casually and nonchalant. And, oh, yeah, sure, of course. I mean, probably, you know, maybe someday he'll move and he'll want me to help him. And, yeah, that came true 100 times over. But if we have 13th step, I swear to God, that's the 14th, is you're about to get really busy moving people. Because drunks, man, we're nomads. We don't stay. And, I'm restless. Let's move. I got a whole group of people who will help looking for service. So he said, I'm going to ask you to do some things and to participate in your recovery is the way that he said it. I'm like, sounds ominous. And wanted me to meet him weekly, wanted me to go through the big book with him, wanted me to join his home group. That was a big thing with him. You got to join my home group. His home group met on Thursday nights, the Minot Thursday night group, and it started at 8 o'clock. And I got there and he said, you got to have a commitment at your home group or you don't ever really belong. Didn't even know what that meant. I'm like, all right. And so they assigned me. Was the head greeter. I think they just made up the term head greeter so I would feel better about it. I'm the head greeter. Well, who are the other greeters? Well, I don't know, but I'm the head greeter. And I call the shots. But so I'm a greeter at my home group, which is interesting because I don't particularly even want to be there. And I'm the face welcoming you. So I'm all sourpuss at standing at the door and, you know, oh, hey, you know. And my sponsor was like, you got to be here at 7 o'clock. Well, the meeting starts at 8. Why do I? Because we don't want anyone getting through that door without their hand shook. Yeah, I can handle that being here at 10 to 8. Trust me. And he's like, no, you're gonna take the action and the results will follow. All right, I don't even know what that means. But so now I'm standing outside. And you know what happened? People started showing up at 7. Hey, we heard you were here greeting. We thought we'd come down and get our hand shook. And welcome. By the way, I share this a lot, but I don't actually share. Eventually, I started kind of liking it. I just like to share the part about how sour I was. But eventually, after I, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is always a program where you take the action and my thoughts follow. That's how it works. I can never think my way into better living. I have to live my way into better thinking. There is no exception to that rule for me. And so I would stand there and act like I wanted to be there. And one day, I found out I wanted to be. And pretty soon, I took a lot of pride in being the greeter. People would come by, hey, welcome. The elevator to sobriety is out. You might want to take the steps. And, oh man, I was so good. Please, feel free to leave your problems. Many do. And this guy's, he's really making me feel welcome. You're damn right. So I'm taking this action. And I'm welcoming people, and I'm greeting people, and I'm there early. And I don't know, it's just, and my sponsor is got me going through the book, and they're tricking me into doing things. One night, he's like, hey, Saturday night, we're speaking at the hospital. You know, can you go? I'm like, yeah, I suppose. He's like, well, we'll be at my house at 5 o'clock. Now, the meeting's at 8, but of course, we're going to greet for 3 hours like idiots. So I show up, and we get in the car, and we take off out of town. And I'm like, I thought we were speaking at the hospital. He's like, yeah, we are. It's in Bismarck, though, 100 miles away, and, you know. Now, I'm stuck in the back middle hump, and I'm going to tell you, for you young people, you're like, what's the hump? I'll tell you. Back in the day, Alcoholics Anonymous had a deal with the automotive manufacturers, and they had them construct a large hump down the middle of a car. It wasn't needed. It was to demean newcomers who were too full of themselves. And so I'm back there, scrunched, knees up, thinking, God, this is horrible. Now, Chris is in the front. Chris is what I like to call the good one. There's always somebody who has to assume that role. Wasn't me. Chris is the good one. What I mean by the good one is that Chris is so fired up on AA, it makes you sick. And God, that's all Chris can talk about is how grateful he is. He's 2 weeks sober. He's been promoted to the head dishwasher. The other dishwashers look to him for advice. And he's AA's a miracle. And oh God, Chris just made me sick. And Chris says, hey, everybody, I've made up a game that we can play on the road. Oh, God, just no, right? And he pulls out a copy of As Bill Sees It. And he said, I'm going to read from As Bill Sees It, and then you have to guess what it's from. Is it from the big book, 12 and 12, a letter Bill wrote? Who knows? And I am like, man, that's it. This is my line in the sand for recovery. You pull this car over right now, and you let me out in the ditch, because whatever little tiny bit of dignity I have left, I am not blowing it on what the hell did Bill write this in game. No, this is where I'm done. Don't care if I'm getting drunk, done. Not willing to do this. I didn't say any of that, thought it. And remember what I said, AA is a program of action, not thought. And if you can accept that, you can make it here. I know your head's working against you. My head is always working against me. You know, Danny talked about it in the 11th step when we get up in the morning and asking God to divorce our thinking. That implies it gets married to those defects every night, right? Every morning when I wake up, I'm apparently married to self-seeking, dishonest motives. And I gotta, again, divorce myself from them. Every day I'm getting divorced. And so my thinking is broke. It's the actions I take. And I didn't say any of that because I wanted my sponsor to like me. And what I did instead is I just guessed grapevine every time. And I took second place. So up yours, Chris. And now, taking actions. By the way, there might be a few here starting to wonder, I'm going to tell you right now, is he ever going to talk about his wife? She's wondering. She's pointing at me right now, talk about me. I met Heidi when I was 2 years sober. We got hired at a job in a hotel together. Heidi, I like to say, had a quality I have been looking for my whole life, an interest in me. And it's an attractive quality, let me tell you. You seem interested in me. I find that very attractive. And we took off, man. We started dating. I was 2 years sober. Heidi had no program, as you'll hear in a minute. And something was wrong. Right out of the gate, something was wrong. When Heidi and I were dating for 3 months, we were seeing a marriage counselor. We weren't even engaged, and we were already in marriage counseling. Who does that? Who's like, hey, I know there's something good here if we just keep digging. We were always fighting, always. We fought in the marriage counselor's office, in the waiting room, and she doused me with a hot cup of coffee. We walked right in. I'm like, we're fighting right now. We'll show you what the hell's going on. And do you need a towel, Jeff? Yeah, and an ice pack. Now, I can't speak for her, but I can tell you this. The expression, and I can't tell you how much I believe in this, anything that I place in front of my recovery, I will lose. Anything. Because I cut myself off from you, and I cut myself off from God. And when I found her, she became so important to me that she went to number one. And she can't be there with me. She knows it, and I know it today, but I didn't know it back then, and I was hanging on out of fear. And when I hang on to things out of fear and I try and control things, bad things happen. And I would try desperately to coax her as to how she would act. I would send off these signals and signs. Heidi would walk into a room, and I didn't like something. I'd make it all pouty. And Heidi would take the bait. She would dance with me on that. She'd be like, what's the matter? Well, when you walked into the room, you didn't tell me you loved me. And, she's like, I'm so sorry, I love you. You know, well, now what? Well, that didn't sound sincere. And, I'm sorry, Jeff, I love you. You know, well, what now? Well, I had to tell you to be sincere, so it's disingenuous. On and on and on. Short version of the story. Short version of the story is that I had to get back and put Alcoholics Anonymous where it belongs. Alcoholics Anonymous is the most important thing in my life. I have a busy life today. I have a rich life and I have a full life. I have areas and things that I would have never dreamed possible for me. But it is all resting on a bedrock of my involvement with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope I never forget that. And so I had to get AA back in front. I had to get AA back in front. And that means I had to start to do the things that I'm supposed to be doing. I had to make sure I was back involved with my meeting, that I was current with my sponsor. And by the way, sponsorship, both sides. You don't have to sponsor somebody, but you need to be trying to work with someone. And what I mean by that, you can do that in a myriad of ways. You don't have to be the guy who's standing up here giving cakes out to people, but for God's sakes, be the person shaking their hand at the door. I will argue all day long with you that is just as important as anything else you will see in AA. Walking up to someone who looks uncomfortable, well, what if they're not? So what? Shake their hand. You're uncomfortable. Shake their hand. Little things. My most effective 12-step work has been done with my ears, not my mouth. Listen. Give of your time. My sponsor told me that a long time ago. He's like, you're going to spend two things in life, Jeff, money and time. And money is replaceable. Give of your time, and you are giving of your most valuable resource. And I try and give of my time to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because I'm wonderful, not because I'm awesome, but because I am sick. And need the reprieve. I need the reprieve of thinking about me for a little while. So Heidi and I we got going and we got married. And we had a great big AA wedding and it was cool and it was fun. And we decided that we wanted to start having kids and couldn't have children. We tried, but I'll tell you, taking all the action. And to make matters worse, by this time, I don't know, 4 or 5 years sober, and I'm sponsoring a bunch of people, and they're all having children, unwanted pregnancies out of wedlock. So every week a sponsee was calling me, oh my God, you know, she's pregnant. I'm like, are you serious? We're over here, stable, kinda, and eventually, I remember one night, my problem with God, I'll tell you, of all the problems I've had, and I've had a lot of them, but I'll tell you my biggest barrier to God's will is my impatience. It's not even about do I think God's will is right. It's do I think God's will is going to happen in the time I think it should. Because if it's not, I'm grabbing the wheel. I got this, God. Bang on. And He'll let me. God's a gentleman. All right, by all means, Jeff, drive. There's a cliff over there to the left and the right and ahead of you, but good luck. And calling other people on the bus with my good intentions. Anyway, where I'm going. I forgot where I was, Jerry. What? Where? I had too many people yelling at me. K Kids, thank you. Jerry's ready to dance. My problem is impatience with God's will. And I just wanted it on my time, and it wasn't God's. And I finally one night sat down, and I had a talk with God, as I tend to do when I finally surrender. And my surrenders always look the same. They're always about my acceptance of things, finally. They're always about me quit trying to corral God into what I think he should do and start trying to seek out what I think he wants me to do. That's what my surrender will look like. And I had a talk with him, and I told him I'm okay with whatever he has planned. And if that's to not have children biologically, then we'll look at other ways. Maybe we'll adopt. Maybe we'll get a dog. I don't know. And the next morning, we found out Heidi was pregnant. We had a little boy. My son, his middle name is Wilson, after the gentleman hiding behind the screen to my left. And when he was 5 years old, he was in kindergarten, and he had to write a little essay on how he got his name. And the teacher showed it to us, and he said, I'm named after Bill Wilson, who started a program that saves my daddy's life. I would miss these things, trying to control, trying to demand, trying to get whatever it is I think I want. 17 months later, we had a girl, and Heidi didn't fully understand the importance of AA yet, so she vetoed the name Abigail Dr. Bob, and I want to tell you one thing. And then we had a third child. We went to the other side of the coin where we were doing everything you could to not have a child. God works there too. And we had this little ball of energy. When she was 2 years old, I was like, oh God, very clear to me that she's alcoholic. Very clear. And I called my sponsor. I'm like, this is so bad. My youngest, save her a seat, she's alcoholic. And my sponsor said something so simple yet so profound. He said, listen, Jeff, I understand why you're saying that. He said, you're looking at your youngest 2-year-old daughter and you're thinking that she's acting like your alcoholic friends. He said, but the truth of the matter is that your alcoholic friends are acting like 2-year-olds. And we've had good things and we've had bad things. We've had life. Heidi later on joined Al-Anon, and I have to say, what a game changer that was. I mean, good and bad. I mean, it was an adjustment. I'd been the guy sober. I'd been the way, hey, we're going to do this. My sponsor said this, and suddenly, well, my sponsor said this. Who the hell asked your sponsor anything about anything? Man. And she, you know how we get all overly zealous in Alcoholics Anonymous. You ever saw an Al-Anon who's overly zealous to detach from you when you do anything? Hey, I'm going to walk outside. Well, if you trip and fall, I will not come help you. I'm detaching. I don't think that's what your program says, but you do you. But I will say this, and I'm going to shut up about it. To all of the Al-Anons in the crowd, no joking, I cannot thank you enough for what your program has done for my family. I didn't always see it in Heidi as a wife, but man, I saw it right away as a mother. My children have benefited greatly because of the efforts and the work that you do in Al-Anon, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Anyway. And that's been that, and that's how things have gone. I want to share a few quick things here in a close. I normally don't do this, and I don't know why. It's not a rule. It's not anything. I just never have. I'm not a guy who traditionally talks about my professional life, but I have been in this area last year at several different events. And last year, if you were here or happened to meet me, you heard that I was unemployed. You're probably thinking, no, Jeff, I heard that on a tape of yours 10 years ago. Yeah, I was unemployed then too. And the 5 years before that, and anyway. But last year in my newest ride on this, I had been let go from a job unexpectedly, and I found myself in the midst of a lot of uncertainty. And I decided then and there that we're going to find out how well AA works, and I'm not going to worry at all about this. I'm going to throw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous, into the service of others, and I'm going to let God take care of this. You hear this stuff all the time, right? And it's fun to say, not so fun to do. And like put on a blindfold and go walk on the interstate for a while. Make sure God will make sure all the cars dodge you. It's a trust issue. Because my problem is in faith and trust. Faith is, yeah, I'm sure everything's going to work out as I watch somebody on the high wire. Trust is I will get in a wheelbarrow as they push me across. Do I trust God? That's really where I've got to get. And I decided that I am going to trust God. And I got busy doing Alcoholics Anonymous. I was making coffee dates and I was going to more meetings. And a guy called me that I used to work with. He said, you should really come check out this company. I met with their CEO. Now, my in a previous life, what I've done most of my professional career is work on e-commerce and marketing. And I was meeting with this CEO, and that's what my resume says. And he says, well, what would you like to do? And I said, I don't want to do e-commerce or marketing. That's my whole resume. And he's like, okay. You know, he scrumples it up and throws it away. He's like, what do you want to do? And something inside of me is like, just be honest. I said, I want to help people. I want to coach. I want to do something to help build a better environment, a better culture. And he said, have you ever heard of the term dream manager? And I had. I'd actually read the book. And he said, we're looking to hire somebody who meets with our employees on a one-on-one basis, helps them identify their goals, deficiencies, whatever's going on, and puts together an accountability plan and helps them move forward. Do you think you could do that? Yeah, I think I could do that. So it's the only time I've ever really wanted to break my anonymity. It's like, I've been doing that for 27 years. I didn't. And that's what I've been doing. I meet normal people and I help them. Normal people, by the way, are really screwed up. And trust me. And they're harder to help because you don't have this card to play at the very end if they're really defiant. Oh, yeah, well, then die drunk. You don't have that. I accidentally said it to one of them. Huh? Never mind. I was just joking. I have a funny sense of humor. I love it. I love the company. I love the people. I love everything about it. And I promise you, you've never heard me talk about a job like that. God took me where he wanted me. And I'll stay there for as long as he decides that's where I need to be. There's no strings here. It just happens to be that this spot in life is a really good one for me. What does recovery look like? Right? We talk about it. What does it really mean? And sometimes we give the impression in Alcoholics Anonymous that because I'm now sober, I'm such a wonderful blessing to the world, and I've done a couple of altruistic actions, that I've been rewarded and blessed beyond measure. Things have happened, and my biggest problem today is wondering what to do with all this money and all these people who love me. And we sometimes paint recovery as that's how it is. Now, I understand we're trying to paint our bright spots bright, but I want to assure you that my recovery, that my sobriety, that my journey has not been about getting what I want. It's not been about getting what I even deserve, thank God. It's been a journey of wanting what I have, of starting to accept the serenity of this is where I am, starting to see things that are already in my life in a better light, starting to recognize that the blessings that I have, they're already there. I don't need outside exterior things to come in to make my life good. I already have all that I need. I just have to discover and get rid of the things that are blocking me off from a God so that I can see it. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. How am I doing on time? Am I okay? All right. I got a mixed response there. If the band starts playing, I'll talk louder. I get up and I head out to work and I mumble the third step prayer, but that's about it. Really, it's, you know, hey God, try and keep up. And off I go. And I'm driving. And on my way to work, a two-lane highway becomes one, right? You know, there's construction. And as I'm driving, some hot dog thinks he's going to go blaring by everybody and scoot in, right? Not today. I speed up to cut him off so he has to come to a dead stop. And I'm like, good, you sit there and think about who you are and what you are. I keep going. I get to work. No. I get to work and I walk in and there's two people in the corner laughing. I don't know if you have this ability, but I have the ability to know when people are laughing at me. And I hear it. I don't like that. And I don't like those two. And I don't like people gossiping. And I get to my desk and I decide I'm feeling inadequate. And sometimes when I'm full of fear, I tend to want to swing to the other side of being cocky. Book talks about when it made us cocky, it made things worse. And I decide to get cocky and send out big idea. And I send out a big idea, and I don't know if you ever do this, but sometimes I throw my idea out with the strict purpose of letting you tell me what a great idea it was, okay? Because I've written the script out. You should now tell me what a great idea this was. And a couple people do respond in kind the way they're supposed to. But then Sally comes back on an email, reply all, and says, I don't agree with Jeff. I think we should do this. I have a problem with Sally. Now, I'm not going to go and attack her head on. I'm not a psycho. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to be a little more subtle. I go into ninja character assassination mode, and I start walking around, and I'm like, hey, I'm just curious, is Sally doing okay? I'm worried, and I want to help. I start planting seeds. I drive home, frustrated, mad. I get home, and there's a bunch of dishes on the counter, and at the time, Heidi's not working, and I'm like, what is going on? Really? I have to come home to this? Ugh. Right? Wouldn't say that I'm a pillar of recovery, right? Get up the next day. We're going to go through the same day. But I'm going to spend a little more time in prayer and meditation. I'm going to allow God to fill up my life. Have you ever had a water bottle? And you go, like, sometimes in airports, they'll have those things where you can fill up your water bottle. But they're really slow. They take a long time. You got to stand there and wait and wait and wait. Sometimes it's like that for prayer with me. I just want to blast it full, but sometimes I have to wait, calm down, and let God in. So I do that, and I'm driving to work, as I said. See, my head tells myself one narrative, and I accept it as the gospel. This guy is trying to scoot by everyone and get in front of me, and I'm not going to let it happen. So here comes Mr. Hot Dog rolling up on me. But this time I submit a different version of what's going on. What if this guy's late to work? What if he has a wife and baby at home? What if they're contingent on his income? What if he was told if he's late one more time, he's going to lose that job? What if I tap on the brake and take 1/8 of a second out of my life and let this guy in? How about that? So I do that, and I let him in. I go into work, and there's two people laughing in the corner. For some reason, it sounds different today, right? And I think to myself, this is really cool that I work in a place where everybody gets along. There's a lot of people here are friends, and we hang out, and we do things. That's really awesome. And I sit down at my desk, and I send out my big idea, and people respond, and Sally responds and says, I don't really agree with Jeff. I think we should do it differently. Now, listen, even on a good day with God, I don't like that. But, but I will investigate prior to contempt. So I go over, and I'm like, hey, Sally, listen, it seems like you were a little harsh in your response, right? And she's, of course, very befuddled. She says, oh, no, I'm sorry, Jeff. She says, you always have good ideas, and I'm trying to really make a name for myself because I'm angling for a promotion. See, Sally's not against me. She's just for herself. And I begrudge people that if it doesn't fit into my script of life. But Sally's not against me at all. So just how about I try and help her? Here's a novel idea. And I go home, and I'm feeling better, and I walk in, and there's stuff on the counter. It's not the dishes on the counter. And but the reason they're there, I didn't tell you that yesterday. The reason that they're there is that my wife is at the park with our kids playing. What a wonderful thing. And here's a novel idea. Why don't I do the dishes? And yeah. See, I don't need anything different. I need to look at my life different. That's what I need. I need a perception change. I need an attitude change. I need a God. And if I can do that, and that doesn't mean good things don't happen. In fact, I'll touch on that and then I'll sit down. There's this expression here that talks about being happy, joyous, and free. And one day I got it in my head. What's the difference between happiness and joy? And I started asking around. And I found out not a lot of people know the answer to this one. And because they sound eerily alike. And I want three things, not two. And years ago, I had a son. Well, I've told you about my son. He turned 15 and he really wanted a laptop. And so we had told him, you know, we couldn't get it, we couldn't afford it, whatever. But we had gotten him a laptop, right? And it was the gift. We'd wrapped it in a different box to throw him off the scent. And it was the gift that you put in the corner, and it's the last one. No, not that one. We'll open that later. It's the last one you open, right? And when my son opened that laptop, the look on his face was happiness. God, he was happy. And then I looked to my left, and I looked at Heidi, and the look on her face watching him was joy. We get both here. We get to be happy. Sometimes things are going to go your way. Sometimes you get the promotion. Sometimes every light is green. Sometimes the girl says yes. We get to be happy here, and I don't want to discount that. But we get something that most of us would have never known to ask for, joy. This genuine feeling of love and satisfaction for other people's success. I watch it happen all the time. I work with people, and I get a front row view in people's lives. Sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to see the power of this beautiful organization that we belong to. And I get to experience the joy of it, where I'm not benefiting in any way, shape, or form. I just get to watch it unfold in your life. We get to be happy, joyous, and of course, free. Free of what? Free of the bondage of self. Free to finally quit focusing on me so I can see you. When I can see you and when I can be with you, I have a chance. Not just at abstaining from alcohol, I have a chance at recovering from alcoholism. I have a chance to be comfortable within my own skin. I have a chance to live a rich, blessed, full, productive, useful life. I cannot thank you enough. God bless.